White Rocket Entertainment.
This week, instead of our usual show, we offer the audio track from our special video live show recorded live in Auburn at the AU Bookstore prior to the Arkansas game. Before we get into that show, though, here's John with his thoughts following the game recorded later. Then we'll go straight into the big show with guest star Brandon Marcello and executive producer Auburn Elvis. We hope you enjoy it and stay tuned for a brand new show next Tuesday morning.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone, quick follow-up edition of the Arkansas game. This is John. This is going to be an addition to our live show podcast format. The first thing I wanted to do as recording this is to say thank you. It was wonderful to meet all the listeners this weekend as Van and I went to Auburn. We both were very humbled by it and inspired by it. It's sometimes when we're doing this show, it feels like we're kind of beaming it out of the void of space and you're not sure if anyone is out there listening, but we met so many great people this weekend and so many of them said, hey, we really appreciate the show. It helps us deal with the wins and the losses and what it means to be an Auburn fan, and we really appreciate your insights into things. And so that really encouraged us and inspired us, and I really wanted again to say it was great to meet all of you, and I look forward to hearing from you. Feel free to send questions or comments anytime. As far as the Arkansas game itself, we did see the game in person, and I've watched a little bit of it on a replay, but we stayed until the very end, the singing of the alma mater, so we didn't miss anything on the field part, but special teams, A+, defense, A-. They gave up 3 points. The quarterback had a couple of runs and kept things alive. There was some third down stuff. They kind of got lucky a little bit, honestly. And then offense, D+. It was bad. Brahms was an improvement at center in terms of the push he was getting, but the overall cohesion of the offense, every play, one person screwed up something. And that's what allowed the pass rush. That's what allowed the ineffectiveness of the rushing game. And none of our running backs are so great that they can overcome the offensive line performing at a mediocre level. If we had great running backs, then they could make the offensive line look good. But we have young, inexperienced running backs who may be great later, eventually, but they're not there yet. And Stidham, we know this already about him. He doesn't do well when he starts to get pressure. He looks down. He sees the rush. And I think as that started to happen in the game, he trusted the offensive line less and less. And he took his eyes off the receivers and looked at the rush. And it really bothered him. And the biggest thing with Stidham, I think, is the lack of connections on the deep balls. Is the receivers have been open deep a lot this season. And he has not hit them. And especially with Slayton last year, the two of them almost had like a psychic connection where they were really in sync with each other, and that is not the case at all this year. I'm not sure if that's a lack of them working on it, as they did last year heading into the season, or there's, because Stidham was injured and didn't get to go through spring practice and stuff, that maybe the timing has never been there this year. But that's something we have to get back, because I think that is there. We have receivers that can run by people and get open deep, and I think when we do that, the offense is going to open up. But in this game in particular, Arkansas didn't do anything elaborate or tricky on defense. They simply sent guys who had been, overwhelmed against other teams and stopped us, and that is very concerning. I'm very concerned about the offense. I think we can beat a lot of the teams on our schedule with the defense, the special teams, and the kind of offense we have, but I'm concerned that the offensive line is a limiting factor and that it's really going to cap a ceiling on how high this team can go, because unless it gets dramatically better, we're not going to be able to stop good teams. So, but that's pretty much it from the Arkansas game. Van and I had a wonderful trip and a great show and a great book signing, and we really enjoyed seeing everybody at the tailgates and at the game and everything. And we look forward to hearing from you and during the rest of the season, and look forward to doing this podcast for many years to come. Thanks, and War Eagle.
White Rocket Entertainment.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 355.
We welcome you to Denver Studio for tonight's game.
Chris Davis takes it in the back of the end zone.
They're not going to keep him off the field tonight.
Hello and welcome to the AU Wishbone Live Video Edition. Brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and the War Eagle Sports Radio Network, and by people like you, the AU Wishbone family, via Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined in person by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
And John, here we are. The chaos has descended on Auburn. We're not in our basements anymore. We're actually in the AU bookstore doing a live episode of the AU Wishbone right here in front of people who are no doubt aghast and embarrassed and ready to flee into the streets. Well, how are things with you? How did you come down to Auburn?
Things are wonderful. We drove down yesterday, bypassed the hurricane flooding, and got down here safely, and excited to be here to do this live show with you in the bookstore in Hamey Center.
It's been a while since we've actually seen each other in person. It's amazing.
And since we have been to a game weekend. It's been a while.
It has been a while. It's very exciting. It's very exciting. And we got a lot of stuff we're going to try to cram into an hour here. First off, I guess we've got to thank the people responsible for us being here, which is Auburn Elvis, who made this possible through his technical expertise. He and his lovely wife have gone way above and beyond the call of duty to make sure that we could have the technical aspects to set up all this crazy, amazing video equipment that we have here. And they've been here working day and night, and I think Auburn Elvis may be in the building to say hello. Are you there, Elvis? Do we have... I think we're going to cut over to... There he is! Auburn Elvis in the house! Woo! Thank you, sir. All right. And also to the AU Bookstore, we appreciate you guys. I know this is a chaotic weekend, game weekend for you anyway, and so it's awesome for you to let us come in and take up some of your prime real estate to do our show. Let's see. A few things that are going on this weekend we got to let people know about. We are doing a book signing.
We're doing a book signing in the morning here at this place. We have copies of our books, Decades of Dominance, some copies, and Season of Our Dreams to sign for people, so we're very excited about that. Or if you're bringing another book, one of those books, or something completely different, then we'll sign that.
You say, if you bring in Game of Thrones, we'll sign that, because we talk about it all the time.
We're happy to be here to talk to people. If you come today or in the morning for the book signing, we'll be happy to speak to anybody that's excited.
Yeah. And for our patrons, our special supporters that are on Patreon.com, we're having a get-together tonight, so check your email for information about that. Also, I think we're going to walk around and see some folks tomorrow morning, right?
Yeah, some of our friends have graciously invited us to their tailgates, and we're going to be happy to do that tomorrow. So we are very appreciative of those who invite us. So we're going to walk around tomorrow afternoon and visit some people and enjoy an Auburn game day.
That's awesome. So we got a lot going on. We got a special guest coming up in just a minute to talk to. But before that, I felt like if we're going to come out in public, we needed to bring all of our special guests, or at least some of them. And so I'm psychically channeling the coach. You ready to have a visit from the coach? Let's. Oh, it's the coach. Well, it's good to be back here, Johnny. I'm looking forward to seeing Coach Jordan tomorrow, leading your Auburn Tigers against Coach Frank Broyles and his Arkansas team. I'm happy to hear that Arkansas is allowed to play Division I football and tackle football. Perhaps this could even lead to statehood. But be careful, Coach Jordan, because that newfangled Arkansas wishbone attack is mighty fearsome, especially when they run that jump that youngster Jerry Jones at tailback. I look for big things from him someday, Jerry Jones. As I once told Abraham Lincoln, you better watch out for Arkansas, Congressman.
because one day they'll overcome all that rickets and illiteracy and challenge to be one of the best football programs in the Southwestern Conference. And someday that might happen. Now I gotta get on out of here. We have a big game later today against West by God, Virginia. I figure we should schedule them now before the war between the states ends and then go back to being part of Virginia. Toodaloo! Hasta la vista! Remember the Maine to hell with Spain! All right. Thank you, Coach, for...
Thank, that was really inspiring.
You get a history lesson with Coach Snyder. You don't just get football talk, you get history. Because he lived it. Every bit of it. All right, so let's see. Let me shuffle my things around. Do we want to talk to Brandon Marcello a little bit on this program?
We do.
All right, well, then we're going to let John step aside for just a second. Let Brandon come on over here. Let's see if we can locate... Can we page Brandon Marcello? Brandon to the front. Brandon Marcello to the front, please. Let's get Brandon in here. It's time for friend of the program.
Other way.
Oh, we're working on it. The logistics are incredibly complex for this operation. We have secret passages leading to our program. All right, Brandon, come on aboard.
Tougher to get around than at night with a newborn baby.
Well, you can change the diapers later. But so we had questions that John worked up for us, but I got to tell you first, there's stuff happening currently with the Auburn program that we probably need to address. Well, I don't know how much you know, and I don't know how much you can say right now, but I'm hearing talk about players-only meetings. Sometimes that's good, sometimes that's bad.
Yeah.
I'm hearing talk about transfers, so forth. What kind of stuff in that is breaking?
Well, I can't say this. I have been hearing both things about players-only meeting. When in fact, there was a players-only meeting, turns out, the other night, and then Javon Myers, Nate Craig Myers left. I think there's a lot of discussion among the players about what their future holds. And with this new redshirt rule allowing players to play in four games and then still redshirt if they haven't redshirted already, some of these guys, including upperclassmen, are kind of going, how can I take advantage of this possibly? And you saw that with Nate Craig Myers and even Javon Myers, who hasn't been playing a lot anyway, and they decided to leave. And I think, not just at Auburn, but here in the next couple few weeks elsewhere, when some players realize they haven't played in four games, or they've played in four games and they want to maybe go elsewhere and their production hasn't been what they want, you're going to see other players asking for the release across the country and wanting to leave. And I don't necessarily believe that the players jumping ship has ended at Auburn. Mm.
So there may be more announcements to come, more tweets saying, I love the Auburn family, but kind of tweets coming. Yeah. Some of the things we've been told about it is, well, this freshman class is just very talented, and and so some of the upperclassmen are not getting the playing time that they expected. When you throw in a depressing loss that we had last week, I mean, is that the main brunt of it, do you think, or are there other things behind the scenes?
Well, I know with Nate Craig Myers, that was definitely the situation. I mean, he had two catches this season, both against Washington, had kind of disappeared off the game plan as far as catching passes. He's probably Auburn's best perimeter blocker, but he wants to catch passes. He wants to make it in the NFL, and he just wasn't getting that opportunity. And then the LSU game, when Seth Williams, a freshman, comes in and replaces him for a little bit, has two catches real quick for 35 yards, I believe, or maybe 39 yards. I think that kind of sealed the deal for him and what he wanted to do, and I don't think anybody was going to talk him out of it. And his half-brother, Javon Myers, I think was going to go anywhere he goes or at least leave, and that came pretty quick. And then, of course, Jalen Harris, the tight end, left the day before them. And I guess what would concern me if I was an Auburn fan is that, you know, Jalen left, and then the next day, I mean, they're friends are friends, teammates are friends, but, like, at the locker that they had emptied, they held, like, a tongue-in-cheek, like, funeral for Jalen Harris, and were, like, almost making fun of the situation. So I wonder what the locker room's really like right now after that LSU loss and going to this Arkansas game, if they're truly focused or whatever. We'll find out Saturday, and we'll find out next week, and then the following week against Mississippi State. But if you're an Auburn fan, just hold on to the railing as hard as you can and kind of ride this out and see what happens in 2 weeks against Mississippi State, because there could be more defections coming, but they still got a lot of talent. They can still win. They could, be in the race, but these next 3 weeks are very, very crucial.
Well, it's a case, I mean,
at some positions, they have a lot of depth. Some might say too much depth. So some players are seeing that they're never going to get an opportunity. Like, I don't know if you know something or not, but like with John and I've talked about, like Malik Miller. I mean, he's like number 8 on the running back depth chart. Even when we're playing Alabama State, he doesn't hardly get any carries. If you're not getting, if you're a junior or a senior and you're not getting carries against Alabama State, you know, I mean, who can blame you for looking for greener pastures?
Yeah, and I also think that, that's why publicly and even privately, Gus Malzahn's not ready to go out there and say that Jartavius Whitlow's the starter, even though it's by far, he is the best running back on the roster. He's the most consistent. He's a downhill runner. He can go between the tackles. I don't think there's another running back on the roster that's fit like him to lead the team offensively carrying the football. And yet they're not ready to say that because I don't think they want to upset Cam Martin, who's a junior, has been here, gave up a little bit to be able to come to Auburn when he was originally set to go to Baylor. Mm-hmm. And the expectation for Cam and from the coaches from what he was hearing was, you're going to be the guy next year. And that proved true in the Washington game. And then Whitlow scored the game-winning touchdown, and it was very apparent that he was the top guy, the top player in the backfield. So I wouldn't be surprised against Arkansas if Cam Martin carries the ball 15, 20 times.
Just to kind of placate him a little bit. Yeah.
But I don't know if that would be enough for him to sit back and go, you know what, maybe I should stick around. I think there's several players on this team and across college football. You're going to, and everybody's wondering this, I keep getting asked this, why is this not happening in other programs? Mm-hmm. Number one, a lot of programs haven't played top 10 opponents and everything.
Twice.
So they haven't seen where they actually stack up on the depth chart and mm-hmm. where their playing time is. They're playing some cupcakes. Mm-hmm. But when they start playing later in the season and they still maybe haven't played 4 games or something, you're going to see freshmen and sophomores across the country jet in the next week or two, 3 weeks, depending on when they start playing this upper-tier talent and figure out if they're actually going to play. And if the coaches say, hey, we're probably going to redshirt you, they might go, well, I want my release now then before I play in more than 4 games and go elsewhere.
Is that, I don't know if you know this or not, but is that something that's happening behind the scenes at Auburn, the idea that they are going to the coaches and sort of planning this out and mapping it out as opposed to just it happens that you don't play in more than 4?
I know that there's brief discussions about that before the season, but I can say this week, mm-hmm. behind the scenes, there have been a lot of player-coach meetings.
That's,
And this is a new headache that coaches across the country
are
expecting.
New.
I mean, you're trying to prepare for a game, and meanwhile, it's like, hey, coach, can I get a few minutes? I want to talk to you. And as a coach, you're thinking, great, this guy's going to leave us. But that's been going on this week. Not necessarily, hey, I'm going to leave, but players trying to get an idea of where they sit with everything and where they sit with the 4 games. Some of them just wondering if they're redshirting, and not necessarily because they want to leave. They just want to know if they're going to be redshirted or not.
Yeah, because you got to make your plans and everything. The offensive line, obviously, has been a topic of concern. Yeah. Do you expect changes? They've been kind of trying to hold steady, it seems like, to this point. What do you think?
They're dealing with some injuries right now, and those are going to lead to some changes. Right now, I as of this hour, and by the time people listen to this, they'll probably change. I'm going to look so stupid by the time some people actually watch this, maybe in a couple of days. But from what I'm hearing, Nick Brahms has been getting a lot of first-team reps at center this week, and is probably going to start at center against Arkansas. If not, he's going to play quite a bit. There is an injury to another player that no one's really talking about, left guard Marquell Harrell. He's got a shoulder issue. As of a couple days ago, he was not ready to play in this game. I think he's going to be a game-time decision come Saturday. There's been talk of moving Caleb Kemp from center to guard to help out with some situations. Austin Troxell, who was at right tackle, might play some guard as well in this game, as we saw against Alabama State. And then at right tackle, Jack Driscoll, I expect him to probably start, but he's banged up a little bit. So you could see up to maybe 2 different players starting along that offensive line against Arkansas. But I would for sure probably say, as of right now, talking, that it looks like Nick Brahms is going to take over at center going into this game. The coaches are keeping it close to the vest. They're not really telling the players, but it certainly looks that way that they're headed.
Okay. On the defense, I think there's the linebackers you don't worry about so much, I guess. But there's 2 questions. One, the defensive line didn't seem like it was quite clicking against LSU. And then the defensive backs were just that's a whole horror story. What do we know, or what do you know that's going on there that – because they were so dominant, it seemed like, the first – against Washington, what happened?
Well, it never helps to get four pass interference penalties in a single game. Argue the validity of those as much as you want. At least three of them were correct. And I would even say that the fourth one, the last one, if you actually watch the tape and slow it down, it was the right call because Jamel Dean pins the receiver's arm, grabs it, and pins it against the receiver right as the ball is about to get there. And in doing so, that's pass interference. You cannot affect the range of motion of a receiver's hand or arm as they're trying to go up for the ball. And technically, that is pass interference. At that point in the game, and a referee is there, and the game is on the line, and both players are going after it, you probably should keep the flag in your pocket. That's the argument to be made. Whether it was actually pass interference, I think it was. The call before that actually wasn't pass interference. It was holding earlier in the play. And that's what should have been called, but nothing would have changed really there. I think, you know, a lot of people are going, hey, why aren't the cornerbacks turning their heads around when they're throwing deep down the field? Some of the elite guys can do that in press man coverage, when they're playing press man. But sometimes when you do that and you're right on the guy, your job in press man coverage, at least what they're being told, is to react to how the receiver is playing the ball. So they're watching their eyes and watching them, and then their job is to shoot their arm up or whatever to bat down the pass. Don't turn your head around. Because if you turn your head around and you're in that close coverage, you're either going to stumble over the guy, or you're going to get, the guy's going to burst past you. So it's difficult to do. The elite guys can maybe peek and turn their head while they're in the press man coverage to do that. I will say this, Auburn did very well when they backed up in zone a little bit against LSU.
Change it up a little bit.
They don't do that a lot. Their MO is press man coverage. Maybe you start seeing more zone coverage. Maybe that's the answer, because Auburn, when they play press man, they're just going to be very aggressive.
So the defensive line, I mean, was it just a fluke? Was it LSU's offensive line was better than advertised?
I think, one, the offensive line was a little bit better. They were healthier than they had been, and they got one player back. Secondly, they were using a lot of seven-man to protect, and then they would kick them back out when they realized a pass rush wasn't coming. Auburn sent five men a couple of times. They didn't blitz a lot. But the problem with that is, if you're not blitzing a lot and they're bringing seven men in, you should be able to defend the pass fairly well. They did, technically. They completed 14 passes of 42 attempts, but they also got called for pass interference, gave up a big fourth and seven play, gave up a big third down play, and allowed LSU to burn the final 5 minutes and 38 seconds off the clock, and that was the difference. So, technically, Auburn did a pretty good job in doing what they had to do against the run.
When it mattered.
And then when it mattered, it's just not happening. And against Washington, even Washington was able to do some of those things until they did something they didn't do against LSU. They sent all-out blitz out on Jake Brown.
And I was wondering about that. We didn't do the all-out. It didn't seem like it.
Yeah, I think they were too afraid, one, of seven-man protection that time, a max protect, if you will. And I think that they felt like that they had the crowd in their pocket on their side, and they could play safe the way they did. And they were getting them in third and longs, and penalties were killing them.
Well, speaking of home crowd, what do you think about the neutral site versus just playing your home and away games debate? Because we did several in a row now of these neutral site games. They have some advantages, some disadvantages. How does that shake out?
You know what? I'm a big fan of the home and homes, just as a reporter getting to go as selfishly. I also think it helps teams with their strength of schedule more than anything. But with Auburn, or if you're an SEC team, it doesn't matter. You're going to have a strong strength of schedule, so it doesn't matter. So for Auburn's case, maybe you should keep doing the neutral site games, but obviously they're going away from that starting in 2022. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, we're still going to Texas to play Oregon, I think, next year.
19, and then 2020 they're playing North Carolina.
Yeah.
So I guess in 2021 all the way through 2028, they're playing home and homes instead of neutral site games, which is interesting. Maybe it's a sign that in the future, beyond 2024, when the SEC rotation and the schedules ends, maybe we might see a 9-game SEC schedule. And that's why they're doing home and homes with the Power Five, because they know that one of their their non-conference games is going to be
one of the cupcakes.
So that way you can still bring fans to the building when you're doing a home and home every other year with the big time program. That's what I think personally might be going on.
You got to go to 9 games because, I mean, is it a conference? You know, did you see the statistic about Auburn playing at Florida? Auburn played at Florida in 2000.
Seven, yeah.
We will play them one time in Auburn until 2030.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Is that a conference? No. Are you a conference if you play one time?
A friend of mine is a reporter as well, Justin Ferguson, mentioned something about doing like a pod system type thing.
Which
they'll never do.
Well, no, but I'm
with you. They should be able to. You should be able to go through a certain amount of years and say we played that team at their place and they played at our place in football. That's the way it should be. And if you want a true conference, you need to do that. And I think it would help the conference overall too, because you want to be having. My goodness, it's been going on for 5, 6, 7 years. The SEC East has just been horrible with one good team, and now you have it's bad with one great team in Georgia. To even things out, get things better, maybe you need to do that a little bit more.
Well, I mean, the only reason we even have two divisions was because Roy Kramer wanted to find a loophole to do a championship game. That's the only reason. So it seems kind of pointless when you go beyond 12 teams and you no longer have that motivation to do it. Then why not worry about competition? Why not worry about fairness and letting teams play each other and all that? So it doesn't make a lot of sense.
I agree with it, but things get complicated with money, as we all know, when money starts getting involved.
All right, last thing for you, as we go into the Arkansas game, what are we not thinking about that we should be thinking about going into this game in terms of, because I don't think we need to worry so much about Arkansas. I think we need to worry about ourselves this week, right?
I think
we need to worry about ourselves. So what should we be worrying about that we're not worried about right now?
Turnovers. The offense not turning the ball over, particularly Jarrett Stidham. He's got to stop turning the ball over if they're going to win some big games down the stretch. He has turned it over way too much, even dating back to the final games of last season, throwing a pick six, fumbling the ball in the red zone, and of course what happened last week at LSU and two interceptions. Secondly, they got to run the ball better. Against Washington and LSU, they're averaging 3.5 yards per carry. They got to get better at that if they're going to win games. Defensively, stop giving up third and longs. Their run defense, I think, has shown that it's been consistent and can play well.
Absolutely.
But they've got to stop it giving up these third and longs. It reminds me too much. This defense is obviously better than 2014.
I knew you were going to say the last half of 2014.
But it reminds me of 2014 when they're giving up. They're stopping teams, then third and long would happen, and they're letting them go over the top.
I hate to say it. The 2014 team had a better offense than this team has. And if this year's defense is going to play like that, this team total will not be as good as 2014. And nobody wants that. We've got to get it.
And I don't think the offense is as good as 2014.
Right, exactly.
And so, I thought it was going to be.
It
hasn't been, and I'm not sure it will be.
So, Brandon,
thank you
so much. It's great to have you on.
I want to say this on the air. I read Decades of Dominance on the Beach when I first came to Auburn.
Awesome.
And
you hated it and threw it to a shark.
No, I blew through it in obviously like half a day. It was
awesome.
Great read. And one of the first things, I bought a lot of Auburn history books so I can not be too stupid when I start covering football. But it's a great book. And
well, I appreciate
I'm glad
it.
You're signing it here.
Right. We're glad you're a friend of the program. We love your work. And we're really happy that you could come by and be on the show.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Let's get our
enjoy the game.
Thank you. Thanks so much. You don't really get to enjoy it, do you? You just kind of have to.
No, I'm in a corner in the press box, not unable to see the game anymore.
All right, let's get Johnny back. We have to go through our secret passages that get us back into the studio. John, you're back. He's gonna plug himself back in.
Hey man, how are you?
All right.
Please clap.
Glad to be back.
All right. Well, that was Brandon. That was pretty good, huh?
That was really good. Good. Sorry. Tough, hard-hitting questions.
I didn't ask him about Batman. That was my big failing, is that I didn't get in a good DC question. So we'll get him back on the podcast one of these days, and we'll give a good half hour on the state of the DC cinematic universe.
Look forward to that.
All right. So let's see. We got to talk a little bit about Arkansas. And you summed it up pretty well. So I think that we have a graphic that sums this up too, right? So
this is not news to anyone, but Arkansas is bad. They are not good. So we're playing Arkansas tomorrow night, and they're not good. They're bad on offense, and they're equally bad on defense.
Equally bad, yeah. It's remarkable. They're balanced.
I mean, I always think, looking at the games they played, I think their defense is really bad, but a lot of it is their offense has been so bad, they've been turning the ball over, they have a lot of turnovers on the road, and they have a lot of three and outs, and that puts their defense in really worse position, so their defense has actually performed worse than you would have expected them to, based on how they're doing. the big thing with Auburn is we cannot have a hangover from the LSU game. We can't let that game beat us 2 weeks in a row. We have to come out and be prepared to play and take Arkansas out early, not let them hang around, have any hope for anything. We need to put them down early and get a big lead so there's none of that. From a game strategy standpoint, I don't think there's a whole lot to talk about. In terms of our offense versus their defense, we need to, as Brandon said, we need to avoid the turnovers. I think we need to focus on the running game. We're going to make changes on the offensive line. We need to execute and open up some better holes to the running backs, and we need to follow through on those. And I just think we need to build some confidence. Their defense, they've switched. John Chavis is defense coordinator, who was at Tennessee and LSU and Texas A&M, and now is at Arkansas. But I'm not particularly scared of him based on how we've done against him when he was at Texas A&M the last few years.
Did you realize he was roommates with Kevin Steele? That blew my mind. They were actually roommates in college.
Well, I mean, they both have that Tennessee connection.
Yeah.
I buy that. In terms of our defense versus their offense, they're talking about changing quarterbacks this week. Potentially, you know, their coach was at Clemson before they got really good. They're trying to run that spread offense that Clemson ran, you know, in the early days before even Deshaun Watson got there. So think like Clemson 2010 game kind of offense is where they're trying to go, but they can't go there yet because they don't have the personnel, especially quarterback.
A lot of screen passes are we going to be looking at? A lot of that kind of stuff?
Yeah,
kind of stuff. That's never fun.
So
it's never fun to defend, but
no. But so I think again the secondary, as y'all discussed, had a bad game this week. I think especially the safeties need to play better this week. There's been a lot of tackling in the open field against that kind of offense, and they need to do a better job. The other angle on this is that Chad Morris obviously is a friend of Gus's. They're friends from way back when they were high school coaches together, and so potentially Gus will not, you know. At some point, he will go conservative and hold back and not try to blow Chad Morris out so the Arkansas fans want him fired tomorrow.
There's also, and we've talked about this in the past, there is the hog hex. So you can never take an Arkansas game entirely for granted. We'd like to think that this might be, you know, the one game where we can relax a little bit in the SEC West, but the hog hex will strike. It'll strike like a rabid pig, like some bad barbecue that just goes down the wrong way, you know.
And then Fred Talley runs for 300.
Oh, Fred Talley's still running in my nightmares. So don't take it completely for granted, right? We've got to be ready. It's Arkansas. Weird things happen.
We can't show up and think, oh, you know, we're still down about the LSU game. Arkansas is terrible. We don't have to get up and prepare for them, because that leads to a bad start at Arkansas, hanging around and have some confidence. We don't need, and then you're in the hog heck situation.
And then I sound like a Georgia announcer when I scream.
Oh my God!
Yeah, as they run by. So, do you want to? Let's see. We need to thank our patrons for support of our show, and I believe we have some B-roll footage of us thanking our patrons.
As always, we have to thank the fine folks that are part of the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, that help keep us on the air and make events like this video broadcast and all of our regular podcasts possible. Those include Christopher Burleson, Joseph Fine, Phil Amthor, Susan Trawick, Ben Spooner, Stephen Thompson, Chris Usher, Justin Bean, Steve Trawick, Richard Stevens, Valiant Hermes, Jacob and Robin Fleming, Clay Henson, Auburn Tiger Talk, Ann Congian, Catherine England, George Gaston, Will Summerford, John McCune, Tom Anderson, David Evers, Andrew Barber, Timothy, Steve Harlan, Dan Thompson, Wes Atkinson, Rich Reimer, Jared Albrick, William Glenn Matthews, Mickey B, Hugh Anderson, Shane Bailey, Matt Robinheimer, Mick Vigicana, Chris Thrash, Logan Chilton, Tony Perry, Alex Nguyen, Josh Teal, David Simpson, Earl Ricks, Mike Finley, C.T. Wayne, Michael Kirshner, Dave Powell, Chris Camo, Chris, Wardan Wade, Jason Albrick, Randall Walker, Ben Amos, Joshua Corbett, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Patrick Williams, Rob Morgan, Stephen Schuster, James Taylor, John Stubbs, Kenneth Brent Rains, Nicholas Craig, Russell Milling, Matthew Wagstaff, Joey Miller, Mark Squire, Dave Medinas, Spanky, Brant Rumble, and J.W. Rice. These are our fine patrons that have hung with us either from the beginning or our recent additions, and we welcome you guys aboard. We appreciate your support very, very much. We couldn't do things like this without you. If you would like to join the family and help us to produce these programs and have your name mentioned in every episode, you also get to be part of John's weekly SEC Power Poll, where we talk about it on the air. You get to participate in our NCAA basketball brackets when that rolls around. You also get early access or discounted access to everything else that we do. So all you have to do is go to www.auwishbone.com. There you will find links to the Patreon page and everything else that we do, videos, audio, books, everything. So just go to www.auwishbone.com. We thank you very much, and War Eagle.
And I have to point out that in the time since I recorded that in my basement, I mean in the Palatial White Rocket Entertainment Studios, we've added three new, I think three if I've missed anybody, Brandon Sisson, Michael Morton, and Lawrence Kane. And we appreciate you guys as well. Welcome aboard. I think now I push this button to get the first part.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
And we get...
It's time for listener questions. Bum, bum, bum. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
And here in the studio, there she is, our announcer lady.
Thank Not you a recording.
Not a recording, live. All right. Listener questions. So what do we have, John? Let's fire it up.
All right. First, we're going to take a question from the studio audience.
What's your name?
I'm Rich Reimer.
Rich!
I'm a patron.
Woo. Yay!
I have a prediction. I think Auburn will come out with the win, but I don't think we'll win by as much as we'd like. Because I think, A, Arkansas is going to bounce back from a horrible loss last week in dueling football that happens. And I think, like Van and John said earlier, there could still be a hangover from the OSU game. So I'm worried that there's some middle ground there where it's going to be closer than we expect.
Nice. Yeah, agreed. And plus the Hog Hex. So we gotta be careful. I mean, I think Rich is exactly right that they're an SEC West team. You can't take anything for granted. And if we totally worry just about our own situation, then you know we could mess around and find ourselves in a fight in the fourth quarter. And who wants that in a game where we're 27 point favorites?
So. All right. Next question comes in from Valiant Hermes,
Yay.
Who says, over the past few seasons, I've tried to be as optimistic as possible after an Auburn loss. Looking back, what's the most positive thing you both can take away from Saturday's game? For me, it was just how great the freshman offense looked.
Well, I think the most positive thing we can take away from last week's game is that we did the show this week and not last week. But that's just me thinking about us. In terms of Auburn, well, it's what we talked about on last week's show, John. That was the imperfect storm, right? 15 things had to happen for us to lose that game by 1 point on the last play of the game. So it's not like LSU came in and kicked our butts. It's that LSU came in and played us really tough, and then 15 things went wrong.
And then we did 15 things poorly, and they won by 1 point.
And they won by 1 point. So I'm not hitting the panic button. Well, I'll start hit the panic button if tomorrow's closer than we like, and if we keep hemorrhaging players that, as we were talking about with Brandon. But I mean, for right now, I think we should let a few more games go by and then go back and reevaluate lessons from that LSU game.
Okay. I think the most positive thing again was the play of the young players in the game.
Yeah.
All right. Our next question comes from Anne Kandigan, who says...
She says I don't say her name right. I try so hard to get everybody's name right.
I think we're going to see her tomorrow, and she's going to correct
She'll
you.
She'll correct. I prepare to be correct.
All right. She says, I'd like to hear your thoughts on the recent news about players leaving Auburn. You and Brandon talked about this a little bit. Is it primarily due to the red shirt rules? I ask because I live in Tallahassee, and with FSU's problem in free fall, which it couldn't happen to a nicer program...
Yeah, we're already really broken up about it.
I'm not seeing news reports of players here heading for the exits.
Yeah.
I have two thoughts. And one, there's like a
like micro level, macro level system stuff. So the micro level stuff is everybody, it's you worry that college football is going to turn to college basketball, and college basketball, the transfer rate is like 35%. So 35% of all the players move every year. And in college football, it's very much, much lower, but you worry that they're that players are going to transfer at a much higher rate.
Yeah.
So, and in this kind of situation, you have talented, highly recruited guys that have been told how good they are since they were in high school. I mean, at one point, his junior year, Nate Craig Myers was like one of the number one recruits in the country, and now, you know, he's reduced to a lot of blocking, and they're not throwing the ball. And so the question in his mind is, you know, what do I have to do? I'm out here doing the dirty work, but I'm not getting passes thrown to me. And this freshman who's splitting time with me is getting the passes thrown to him. So on the micro level, it's about, you know, the individual depth chart and you know, who's getting the ball, and players worry about that. At the system level, I worry, you know, college football, that's the direction we're heading. With the redshirt rule, players can play 4 games. And then still redshirt and transfer and be eligible. They could declare this season their redshirt season and then be eligible to start day one next year if they've been enrolled in class at the other school the whole time. So I think you're going to see this at more colleges and universities going forward. I think the Auburn players are kind of on the leading edge of some of this stuff in terms of what's happened this week. And I think you're going to see it some other places where, I mean, we've seen it at the quarterback position everywhere where guys who don't win, you know, they immediately, the next day, they're gone. And I think, I mean, we can see the situation a year from now. We're going to have 4 good quarterbacks on campus competing for the starting job,
right,
assuming Jared Stidham is gone, not a 100% in the bank assumption at this point. But so that could be a situation where those guys could decide, to, you know, that it's, you know, they want the opportunity to go play somewhere else. So
I think this is one of those moments, that rule, the four game redshirt rule. I think it's one of those moments that's, I mean, when it came out, people knew it was going to be dramatic and revolutionary to a certain degree, but I think it's even more than they thought, because it really is changing the very nature of how the players think of the program, of their careers, of how long they're going to, how patient they're going to be, all those things. I mean, it gives them more of an out than they had before.
And I think sometimes, like, when we as fans, like, when we see, like, the preseason depth chart released and that kind of stuff, and we think, like, oh, I don't buy that. Like, sometimes the intended audience isn't to pull something over on us or the media, whatever. Sometimes the intended audience is the players, where it's like we're trying to, you know, make it seem like you are going to play a lot. We want to list you as a starter. And I think it's not like this intent to deceive sometimes. I think it's that. I think it's more about you want them to feel valued and involved and stuff, and you want them to stay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Next email at auwishbone@gmail.com is from Theodore Roosevelt.
Hey, Mr. President. I gotta get the da 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 da.
All right, and he says, as someone who has been following y'all since 2010, it really warms my heart to see you two get the recognition you deserve. It's like in watching an under-the-radar recruit go from an unknown to a big-name NFL draft pick. Here's to the last 8 years and 8 years more in the future.
Hey! War Eagle. All right. Who was that from?
That was from Theodore Roosevelt.
Oh, yeah. He's been a consistent, good question asker for a while now, and he'll be very pleased that Coach Snyder did say, remember the Maine to help the Spain a while ago, because he fought in the Spanish-American War. He's holding up pretty well for his age. You
know? He is.
Yeah. What else we got?
I have one other question.
Go to our...
So far, Stidham hasn't been as good as advertised. Do you expect him to turn it around, or is it more likely for him to continue to show flashes of greatness with mostly mediocre play? And that's from Eric Hammond.
Ah, thank you. Thank you, disembodied voice. So, Stidham, what do you think? I mean, that's a good question. I mean, We praise him to the heavens because we've seen some of the quarterback play, particularly in the passing game that we've had over the last how many ever years. But has he peaked? Is he having problems? What do we make of him right now? I don't know.
I think clearly he's not playing at his highest level. We saw in the Georgia and Alabama games last year when he's playing at the peak of his ability. And especially think about like the Mississippi State game last year when we absolutely demolished them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the Georgia game, he was really on. And I think about the way he played in those games, as focused as he was, him running the ball and getting the tough yards and making tough plays. But at the same time, we've also seen the other Jarrett under pressure, you know, against Clemson, against Washington, some in the LSU game where he's not at his best. And I think he has to play at a really high level for this Auburn team to get where it wants to go. I don't see any other scenario where we could get where we want to go unless he gets there. I think he can play better. This year particularly, I've seen him really struggle with the deep balls. Like, he really had a problem on the deep passes. Even in the Alabama State game, there was three or four deep balls that he threw that where the guys were wide open and they didn't connect. So I think there's something there that last year, that timing was really good. He and Slayton had that timing really down last year, and it's not the same right now, and we have to get that fixed. He needs to be confident, and he needs to be connecting. We are producing a much lower rate of explosive plays than we did last year.
At this point, most of the conference.
That's right. So last year we were producing, you know, a much higher number of plays, 10 yards, 20 yards, 30 yards down the field, and we are not doing that right now. And I think the passing connection, especially the Stidham-Slayton connection, is a big part of that.
Well, I mean, if you think about every good Auburn team the last, under Gus, either as offensive coordinator or head coach, we had one big weapon on offense, right? Whether it was Cam, whether it was Trey Mason at his best, or Nick Marshall, both of them together, went to the national championship game, whether it was Cameron Harris Payne. He is our big weapon. I mean, we are not a power running game this team. Running team this year. We're scratching and clawing to put together enough of a running attack right now to be credible as an Auburn running game. It's close, right? If he's not the big weapon, what are we hanging our hat on offense this year?
No, that's it. To me, that's it. He and the receivers are the thing that could take us to the next level. They're the weapon that we can use to be really good. So I think we have another question over here.
Yes.
My question is, some of our defensive backs are running down the field with their back to the ball. I want to ask you about that.
Well, that looked like that gentleman looks familiar to me. That looks like a famous Auburn author.
It is.
And biographer. Rindo. No, Brandon addressed that, though. The idea that on the one hand you want them to be, you know, looking back, but on the other hand he was saying against certain receivers like LSU, if you look back at the ball, the receiver's gone and you're worse. So what do you think?
I mean, one thing is, honestly, like, they're coached to play that way sometimes. I think that's a lot of it. And Kevin Steele's talked about it. I think they're teaching them to cover that way. I don't think it's an accident. And also, I think some of it is an ability thing. Like, there was the cornerbacks that could do that are the great defensive backs. You know, the really, and Carlton Davis could do that, and we've been spoiled. We miss Carlton Davis. He was so good and so dependable against the run in the past, the last few years, and he's gone. And now we're like, wow, so that's what it's like to play without Carlton Davis, taking up one side of the field and nobody even throwing over there. So I think that's a big piece of it. He could do that, and I think the other guys, they're doing everything they can just to stay with the receiver. And I think that if they turn their head around, unless they're sure the ball is there, they're going to lose the guy and it's going to be worse maybe. I mean, I wish they had spent a bunch of time on defense in this offseason focusing on creating turnovers. We haven't seen that yet. We need them to – I mean, that would be a huge help to the offense if the defense could create some turnovers, give them some good field position and make some positive plays and put them, you know,
that would
in a
help.
Good spot.
Yeah, instead of the offense having to do 90 yards or 80
That's
yards
it.
Of business every time. Absolutely. Do you have any other – Are we at the bottom? Are we at the, reached the end?
We have reached the end of listener questions.
The end of listener questions. I think that means we have to bring our little announcer back in to do the B-52s bit, which is... Is Alabama not playing this week?
Yeah, they are.
Well, I don't see them on the. Did they not make the list?
This is a user error. Now Alabama is playing Texas A&M at home tomorrow.
Alabama's playing Texas A&M.
Russia, number one. Iran, number one. Bama, number one.
So this sometimes what, you just got to get it out.
This is what it's come to, that we have to cheer for Jimbo Fisher tomorrow, okay? That's where my life is now. I'm a big Jimbo Fisher fan for like 4 hours tomorrow. And after that, we can go back to scraping him off our shoe.
Yes. Wow. So normally we would say no chance at all, but they look, A&M, the Collie Dogs, they look scrappy against Clemson. Now, we know that Clemson starts kind of slow, and we know that Clemson plays to the level of their opponent.
And Clemson offensively is just, they do just enough.
Just enough.
They're like, just enough. Alabama is like, you know, nuclear weapons down on you.
So, do we think this is competitive at all, or is it going to be, you know?
I think it'll be competitive for a quarter and a half.
And I guess you're not trying to say, and then A&M just kills them. Because I'm just trying to find something to...
I'm not holding my breath.
No, all right. So Alabama in a walk. All right. Georgia at Missouri. Well, so while I come down here, they go up there. I got you. So...
you avoided all the Georgia fans. That was a good move.
I'm surprised we didn't pass them on the road. How much do they travel going all the way up to Columbia? I mean, I didn't see a one going up there. I didn't see a one. But does Missouri have a chance here? Probably not.
Based on what I saw in the South Carolina-Georgia game, no.
But, no.
I mean, if their quarterback is really hot, it's a noon game, you know, so 11 a.m. Central, so you got that early start. Maybe Georgia's real sluggish.
Georgia's in the Jefferson Pilot slot.
So maybe they're not. Yeah. Maybe they're not on top of their game and all that stuff. Right. So, you know.
They got the big heads after South Carolina.
That's what I'm saying. Everybody's been writing them into the playoffs. So maybe Missouri comes out and throws. Missouri threw the ball on them pretty well last year, so maybe they do it again, but I'm not holding my breath.
That Derek Dooley machine. A fine-tuned Derek Dooley machine. A game that once was the pinnacle of SEC matchups. Now, a team that lost to Kentucky versus a team that lost to everybody. Florida at Tennessee.
Two mediocre teams. I think Florida's better mediocre than Tennessee's just bad mediocre.
Our mediocre's better than yours. Boy, look out.
So, no, I think that's it. I think Tennessee's still got a long way to go. I think Florida's better, and I think they'll beat them. I don't think Florida's good.
No.
But no. I think they are not bad.
Let's see. Mississippi State at Kentucky. Now, this could be interesting because, obviously, Mississippi State has thoughts of grandeur, delusions of grandeur, maybe. They are Mississippi State, so they're bound to lose at least three games, right, including to Alabama, because that's the law. You have to obey the law. That's the law. But at Kentucky, in Cam Newton State, I mean CM Newton Stadium. So
weird things happen in Kentucky.
Weird things happen. So has Kentucky got a chance?
Yes. I mean it.
They got a puncher's chance. Do they punch? I don't know. Do they punch?
Their biggest problem is they're good at running the ball, and Mississippi State's best thing is their defensive line. And they're going to run right into those guys, and I'm worried that's going to be bad for Kentucky. Kentucky has this young quarterback, JUCO transfer guy, and I think he's pretty good. I think he could do some stuff. And can Mississippi State, with this new offense, go on the road and generate positive plays? Can they make some stuff happen in a hostile stadium if things aren't going their way? Can they put together some long drives? I suspect they can and they will, but Kentucky certainly has a chance in this game.
Well, you got to think.
Yeah, that's second best team in the East, Kentucky.
Well, you got to think that if Mississippi State can pull this off, then they're going to come into the game with us pretty soon with some momentum. They could be undefeated. Maybe we should cheer for Kentucky. I don't know. I mean, strategically?
I'm happy for Kentucky to reveal some weaknesses in them that have not heretofore shown themselves. Yeah. That would be nice.
You know, in fact, it might be a good thing if Mississippi State is undefeated when they play us, but we see some weaknesses. Yeah, that's a good point. LSU's reward for winning our game is they get Louisiana Tech at home. I mean, they better beat the stew out of Louisiana Tech after they beat us, right? So, yeah. And then Kent State at Ole Miss, what can you say? I mean,
Kent State starring former Auburn transfer quarterback, Woody Barrett.
Woody Barrett! Is he going to play? Is he playing
for
them?
He's the starter. He's good.
Oh, wow. Oh, I'm sure he's going to throw for 500 yards, and there will be Auburn fans going, you see, I told you they should have put me. No, so, yeah, okay. But, you know, we know that Ole Miss's defense gave up like 40 points to my wife's alma mater last week. Which
Two weeks ago.
Alabama. That's right. And so Kent State, 60. Yeah, they're going to score 60 on the Rebels, the Black Bears,
Woody
the Sharks,
Heisman,
whatever they are.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, Ole Miss, you can never, ever criticize us for having too many mascots and nicknames ever again. You can't. You're done. Admiral Akbar and Black Bear and the Shark and the Rebel and the Colonel Sanders and the stuff. And no. Okay. Is that everything? If we...
We're there.
We're like done. Wow. I don't want it to end. It's been too much fun. We've gotten to do all the
South Carolina.
What?
South Carolina.
I missed the game. I skipped a game. Another game.
Vandy.
South Carolina is playing at Vanderbilt.
Oh, there it is. South Carolina. Vanderbilt has been overachieving. South Carolina, well, for that one game, underachieving. Could Vandy pull it off?
100% they can. They played well against Notre Dame last week. They were
in
the game.
They did.
And I think at home, I think they could beat South Carolina. South Carolina's clearly a better quarterback, but other than that...
Yeah. Half the stadium will be Gamecock fans. We know this because it's Vanderbilt, right?
Yes.
But, I mean, and playing well against Notre Dame is kind of a thing people do. But that being said,
Everybody thought Vanderbilt was going to be terrible and he was going to get fired this year, but they've looked surprisingly competent.
And surprisingly competent. That's something that Vanderbilt aspires to, is surprisingly competent. And South Carolina, I mean, you know, I didn't think it was fair at the start of the season that everybody set that up as, you know, it's like South Carolina, like the little chicken. You know, it's like Princess Leia comes out in a hologram and says to the chicken, help us and the rest of the SEC, chicken, you're our only hope. And they go out and, you know, get their head chopped off by Georgia. So, all right, well, I guess we will wrap things up. As I always say to you from the Palatial Studios, but I'll say it here live in the AU Bookstore today, any last thoughts?
This has been a lot of fun.
Yep.
I would like to thank I'd like to thank Albert Elvis.
Absolutely.
And his wife for a tremendous job and the technical support for this, for making this happen. And I would like to thank the people that actually took their time out of their day to come watch this in person.
Watch our insanity.
And I appreciate that tremendously.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks, everybody, for watching at home. And for those of you listening on the podcast later on, we hope you enjoyed our predictions and that they were all accurate. you know more than we do at this moment. And as I always say, our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Go to the game.
All right.
I'm going to say go to the game.
Thanks for listening to the Wishbone Podcast. All past episodes are available at auwishbone.podbean.com and via iTunes. For more Auburn fun, join us on Facebook at facebook.com/auwishbone and follow the show on Twitter at auwishbone. War Eagle.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone podcast.
Go to bed.